News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday. Hope we can, or whatever day you're listening, if you're listening to the podcast version of this show. Of course, we're live on the air here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 at 4 o'clock on Saturday Central Time. But you can listen anytime wherever you get your podcasts. So whenever you're listening, we hope you're having a great day. And we're going to hope to make it just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so now from the Pop Culture Knowledge channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
What's up? Glad to be here. So you and I have talked a little bit over the past couple of months about my new fascination with the WWE.
Is that a new fascination or is that a continuing fascination?
That's actually it's so wild to think. It's actually been about 2 years, and I'm still kind of trying to get by on, like, noob energy. Like, no, this isn't a thing that I've been a long-time fan of. I just now got into it. But it turns out it's been since, like, the beginning of 2023. So we're coming up on 2 years now. But as a fan of WWE wrestling, there was a monumentous occasion that happened on Monday, January 6th, and that was the premiere of Raw on Netflix. And this was obviously for the folks at home, if you're not aware, Monday Night Raw is the longest running concurrent television series in American history. It has been on terrestrial television for, you know, decades now. 40 years, give or take a little bit.
I'm going to question that. No, I don't think that's true, because not as Raw anyway. The WWE has certainly been on television for 40 plus years or whatever it is, but not as Raw. No way Raw's been on longer than The Simpsons.
Longest? I can't Google it right now. I'm going off WWE terminology. And to be fair, I'll say this right now. They're a bunch of carnies. They trump their numbers and lie about stuff all the time. That's the nature of the industry.
Are you saying wrestling's fake?
How dare you? How dare you, sir? What a casual thing to say.
So for the record, WWE Raw, also known as Monday Night Raw or simply Raw, debuted in January of
93.
03, 13, 23. So 32 years-ish, but The Simpsons debuted in 89.
So how do they... whatever. Okay, you're right. Absolutely. I don't know how they got away with saying that, because clearly Simpsons has been on for forever. They got 2.6 million American households concurrent streams on Netflix. They got 4.9 million global views within the first 24 hours. These are great numbers. When you remember the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight a couple of months back, I think that had 60 million views, give or take a little bit. So, like, this is not anywhere near the scale of that, but it was never going to be, let's be honest. But the opening package of it kind of pulls back the curtain and lets everybody in on the fact that, like, yes, wrestling is fake, quote-unquote fake, but this is another medium for storytelling. You guys love TV. You guys love movies. Nobody ever feels the need to say that's fake. So here we're all here together. We understand what it is. And it was a good show. It took place at the Intuit Dome in L.A., and I watched along with it. A lot of big stars came out, a lot of celebrities from our youth, like Macaulay Culkin and the girl that played Topanga, and then more recent stars like Michael Che. Everybody's in the audience. So it was cool. I really enjoyed it. And
Is somebody a star if you don't know their name?
What's her name, dude?
I know her. I mean, I know her name, but like, if you don't know her, if like the general like mentioning of the person is the girl that plays Topanga and not her actual name, is she really a star?
For the record,
Danielle Fishel.
Danielle Fishel. Yeah. I was never a Boy Meets World guy.
Neither was I. I do happen to know the name, but like, anytime you hear anybody talk about her, it's. They rarely use her name. It's usually Topanga.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
But, you can say that about a lot of people.
You did not watch this event, but you do have social media. Any big takeaway from the event that you kind of, picked up on?
Hulk Hogan getting booed.
There was that.
That's my big takeaway, which I'm here for, because I, you know, in the immortal words of Rowdy Roddy Piper, in the timeless WWF at the time wrestler's cover of the classic song Land of a Thousand Dances, Hulk is such a yo-yo.
I'm not
overly impressed with Hogan. You know, at one point they kicked him out after he said some really terrible things, but they let him back in.
Yeah. It's one of those things. A lot of people were like, well, they were in LA, and we're going to talk a little more about that. But what do you expect? He openly and full-throatedly endorsed Donald Trump. But so did Taker, and Taker got thunderous applause. So there's something about Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. I don't think it's
just picked up on it.
It may be a factor, but I don't think overall that has anything to do with Hogan getting booed. I think Hogan has just made himself an unwelcome presence. I've met a lot of wrestlers. I'm not a big wrestling fan, but I've met a lot of wrestlers. Haven't met Hogan, but it's interesting that it seems like in real life the heels tend to be the cooler people.
Yeah, that's an interesting take.
The more down to earth, the more actual, like really in real life, salt of the earth kind of people. But you mentioned LA, and you know, Hogan getting booed may have been a disaster for him, but obviously, there are much bigger and more concerning disasters going on in LA right now. You know, we're thinking about all these folks that are affected by these cataclysmic fires that are happening in LA, and you know, it's just been heartbreaking to watch. You know, I was in LA last year for a little while. I think you were there fairly recently too.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these fires are getting very close to places I visited, and we're hearing about, you know. Of course, you know, just in general, you don't want to hear about anybody losing their home. But when you hear about people that you've met or that you know or that you're familiar with from, you know, their work, that kind of has a little bit of a different impact. And, you know, I've happened to have heard, you know, of at least three former Pensacon guests who've lost their homes. So, you know, the people that I've worked with. And then somebody we had on this program, BJ McDonnell, who is a director and a camera operator, is a Pensacola guy, born and raised in this area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately lost his home. It's rough. And we had a plan this week to talk about award season and where things are going. And we're still going to do that to some extent. But a big part of that conversation is put off by all of this, because a lot of these awards that we're expecting to have, the Critics' Choice Awards this Sunday, that show has now been postponed a week. We were expecting to have the Producers Guild nominations this week. Those have been put back. Several of the nominations that were due to come out this week have been pushed back. They actually have even extended the voting window for the Oscars, and they're pushing back the Oscar nominations, which were supposed to come out on Tuesday, until next Sunday. So, you know, is that the most important thing that's going on with these fires? Of course. You know, any of these awards, anything even entertainment related in general, is secondary. But in the course of this show, because we talk about entertainment on pop culture on this show, that kind of thing kind of falls into our category where we maybe wouldn't spend so much time talking about this otherwise. Things like a number of TV series and movies have shut down productions because their productions were threatened. I've personally talked to, you know, as you know, I work on Pensacon. I've talked to some agents who have had to be evacuated from their homes and their businesses that, you know, are people that we deal with bringing their clients to Pensacon. So it's just a terrible thing. And our hearts go out to everybody that's affected by this, whether they're famous or not, whether they're a celebrity you like or you don't like, it doesn't matter. It's horrible to lose your home and to have your whole life threatened, even if you can afford to rebuild tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so just want to keep that in mind. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. We'll keep it light the rest of the show. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, it's interesting to see that that's a bit of the score from the movie Challengers, which just won the Golden Globe for Best Original Score. It's by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, who have won, that's now their third Golden Globe for score. They've won two Oscars for score, and most likely going to get a nomination for this one as well. And I think probably have a good chance at winning it. It's interesting though, because I think that Trent, of course, known for Nine Inch Nails, this is the most Nine Inch Nails sounding score he's done.
It is very Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I'm here for it all day long. But it's also just a really good, solid score. But it's also given us a chance to talk about looking back at the Golden Globes that we just saw this past weekend and kind of looking at what they might foretell a little bit for award season and what some of the nominations we're seeing coming out now are also kind of foretelling as we get close to award season, we get close to the Oscar nominations coming out in just a couple weeks, that sort of thing. So before we get into like the actual awards themselves, how'd you feel about Nikki Glaser as a host?
She was very good. I think she filled the niche that you and I suspected that she would, and that was to be incisive and be able to rib the celebrities without it ever, being as biting as what Ricky Gervais did. And I think that's what they needed from her. And I think while I thought this year was unremarkable, with a couple notable exceptions, it was not the disaster that last year's was when they threw Joe Coy to the wolves and he went out there and just had a terrible showing. Nikki was the consummate professional. Her monologues were great. She did a good job of kind of fading off into the background when she needed to. And I thought the popular bit was very, very funny.
It was just a 2000% better show with her than it was with Joe Coy. Let's just get that out there from the start. But I think she was phenomenal. I mean, that she had a joke in the, if you're familiar with Nikki Glaser's style, she has this very, like, she is known for doing a lot of roast stuff, but she has this way of delivery where she sounds like she's making a compliment and then she throws in a little barb and then she pulls it back a little bit. And like, she does that really well, but that, to me, the best joke she had all night was just like a throwaway line, because she'd been going through and doing these little bits, and you know, she talked about Kate Winslet and Zendaya and you know, people here and there, and she's doing the crowd work. She's looking around, seeing who's in the crowd, and she's talking about the people in the crowd. And she says, "Oh, who else is here? Oh, look, it's 2-time Holocaust survivor Adrian Brody."
Yeah,
I swear, every time I think about that joke, I laugh again, because it's. It goes back to, and in fairness, it kind of does kind of call back to an old Ricky Gervais joke that, you know, he, that was in the, when his show Extras, when he, where he played an extra who ended up going on to become a sitcom star, but every episode they'd be extras on some movie or TV show that an actual actor was on playing themselves. And there was one where Kate Winslet was the guest actress in that particular show. And he was having a conversation with her about how she hadn't won an Oscar yet at the time and how she needed to do a Holocaust movie and that would get her Oscar. And then sure enough, in real life, that actually happened. She won an Oscar for The Reader, which was a Holocaust movie. And Adrian Brody, of course, has won an Oscar already for The Pianist, which was a Holocaust movie. And lo and behold, also won the Golden Globe for that. But lo and behold, at the Golden Globes this year, won the Golden Globe for Best Actor in a Drama for a Holocaust movie, The Brutalist. And so it's this thing. And really, I don't think has gotten a whole lot of nominations in between the two for anything. Like, I can't think of, like, he kind of made himself persona non grata in Hollywood there for a little bit, too. And so, even not knowing that he was going to win, but knowing that he was a front runner and that he was nominated for this, it's just a, if you know, it's one of those, if you know, jokes.
That was a really good one. I liked her non sequiturs referencing movie and television series titles that related to Ben Affleck and then to RFK Jr. I thought those were very clever bits. She had some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I love her as a comic in general. I think she's very funny. Even when she's not, you know, like doing roast type stuff. Like if you've seen her most recent stand-up special, which I did, it's fantastic. And a lot of it has nothing to do with like roasting anybody or anything, or, unless you're talking about like roasting herself, because she can be very self-deprecating too. You know, she will do comedy about herself and kind of treat herself the same way she treats people when she's doing roasts. It was hilarious. And in fact, that comedy special was up for a Golden Globe because they do a Golden Globe for the best comedy special. She did not win, but she was nominated and deserved. And, you know, side note to that too, shout out to Nate Bargatze, or am I pronouncing his name right?
Bargatze,
who presented that award, and the bit that he did presenting that award again was very self-deprecating and very
funny,
very, very funny. So, of course, Ali Wong won that award, and I kind of wasn't surprised by that because she's kind of the critical darling of the stand-up comedy world right now. So,
if I may, the moment that we almost had could have put the "Keep My Wife's Name Out Your Mouth" as a distant memory in our rearview mirror when they put Vin Diesel up there on stage, mere feet away from Dwayne Johnson to talk about the blockbusters. I was hoping and wishing, trying to actualize it to happen, but at no point did The Rock tackle Vin Diesel and pull the white tablecloth down off of the tables and it turned into like a beat down angle. But
so you were hoping for another WWE work is what you were hoping
correct.
For.
Yeah. Correct. I'm here for chaos.
Yeah. Again, that's not real life. yeah, but yeah, that whole little bit where like he looked down at him and said, "Hey, Dwayne."
Yes.
It was like,
"Oh, dude."
Yeah, it was like that. There was a little bit of tension there. You could kind of feel
it. It's another one of those if you know, you know moments, yeah. And the producers knew.
Oh yeah, for sure. It was weird. That moment was a little weird. Like, and it does seem like they kind of have quashed their beef, but they're not above like playing it up either.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
You know, I thought overall the show was very good. I think that a little long, as these things can sometimes be, and some of the scripted bits for the presentations fell a little flat, but that's always going to be the case. But
Ford and Mackie was a good pairing.
Yeah.
I like that.
But you know, there's already talk about Nikki Glaser coming back next year, and I'm here for it. Let her host. As far as I'm concerned, let her host all of them. I think she was fantastic. Like, I can't think of anybody in very recent memory that I think has done it better. I think Kimmel's a great Oscar host.
Any other wild standouts from the show itself to you?
I mean, you know, watching Zoe Saldana give her speech was, you know, that was quite moving. Yeah, you know, that was very well done.
I felt another way about that one, but I thought Demi Moore's was really, really good.
Demi Moore's was great, and I think Demi Moore gave herself a big boost in the Oscar race with that speech, actually.
Break that down for the listeners, because I agree with you.
Well, she got up and talked about how she had been told when she was a younger actress that she was a popcorn movie actress, and that's all she was ever going to be. That, you know, she makes, you know, this populist fare that, you know, and she was a very attractive woman and, you know, that kind of thing, but that she was never going to be really taken seriously and that she was never going to be an awards contender. And she bought into it and she told herself that's all she was going to be. And that's, you know, that kind of made herself okay with that. And now she is getting deserved recognition because, first of all, she was never a bad actress. She was always a very good actress. And she'd done a couple of things along the lines where there was like some recognition of that. Like, you know, she got some recognition for things like G.I. Jane and Striptease and a couple others here and there, but didn't really get
MTV Music Awards.
Yeah, but not like quote unquote real awards.
Right.
And I just thought it was very moving to see that speech. And I think that is going to resonate with a lot of Oscar voters.
That's what I wanted to. Because they do watch the awards shows, they might be more compelled to vote for her because of a good speech.
Yeah, I think she was always going to get nominated, but now I think she's got a better chance of winning than I thought she had before getting that post. And you can kind of very much compare it with a movie that, in a lot of ways, has a lot of similarities with The Substance, The Last Showgirl with Pamela Anderson, which I just opened here locally and I have just seen. In that it's the same kind of thing. Like, Pamela Anderson is getting awards recognition for this role. She was nominated for the Golden Globe. She got a SAG nomination this week. But part of that is it's resonating because of her story, Pamela Anderson's story, and how that that verisimilitude with the character she's playing in the movie comes into, much the same way that Mickey Rourke had with The Wrestler.
Yeah, good comparison.
Yeah, and actually, I think The Last Showgirl and The Wrestler have an awful lot in common as well. Like if I was going to say, and this makes the movie sound better than it is in fairness, but like The Last Showgirl is where The Wrestler and The Substance meet in a lot of ways. The Wrestler and The Substance are also both better movies than The Last Showgirl, but that's neither here nor there. But that I really feel like while Pam is very good in this movie, I think that she's getting the recognition not so much because she's good, but because of how this role gets an extra oomph from it being Pam Anderson in this role.
Yeah, no, I that makes a lot of sense to me. I swore when Demi Moore was giving that speech that they were going to splash water on Elphaba and Glinda and just watch them melt into their seats as she sat there and diminished popcorn movies and they win the award that they did.
again, that being said, like I think Demi's upped her chances. I don't necessarily see Pam getting the Oscar nomination, and I definitely don't think she's going to win any of these. We're going to talk more about this when we come back. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Familia a chingar y qué hicieron con esos cadáveres ácido. Miren al juez Santos, mírenlo, no le importa nada, solo los niños los arcos los tratan a tiros, los llevan afuera de todos sus pueblos natales a cambio de eso. Santos reduce los juicios a falta de pruebas. Habla esta gente, habla, pero ahora lo van a pagar, a pagar, a pagar. Habla esta gente, habla, pero ahora lo News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, and we're talking about as we lead up to the Oscars race, kind of looking back at last week's Golden Globes, looking at the SAG nominations that came out this week, and kind of trying to forecast where things are going. And that song may be a good indicator of where things are going. That is El Mal from the movie Emilia Perez, which racked up the Golden Globes. Won not just for that song, but we also saw Best Supporting Actress for Zoe Saldana. We saw that one for Best Musical or Comedy. So several awards on this, and also did very well in the SAG nominations that came out this week as well. Got a nomination for the Best Cast, as well as several acting nominations. I thought I had those nominations right in front of me, but I don't. But Jeremy, what's your thinking on this movie? I know I don't believe you've seen it yet, have you?
No, I haven't had a chance to watch it, and it kind of snuck up on me, if I'm being honest. Nikki Glaser made a reference to that, how it's the best movie that auto-played after the latest episode or season of Is It Cake or something to that effect. So it's a Netflix movie. It didn't get a theatrical run that I'm aware of. And
it would have gotten at least a small one because you have to have one to qualify for the Oscars.
Oh, that's right. So I'm interested in it because I do like Zoe Saldana. So I'm curious to check it out. I do feel like it was one of those films that are current and of the moment and that Academy Awards voters like to, prop up. And so, if I would have known what it was prior to making our predictions, I probably would have ranked it a little bit higher in some places, because it did end up, to me, being the surprise of the night.
I've seen some kind of mixed reviews on it, and yeah. I think there's so much competition this year. So we've got, at the SAGs, it's up for basically the same three awards that it won, but because it did not win lead actress, which was Carla Sofia Gascon, who lost it to Demi Moore. But it did win for best supporting actress, Zoe Saldana, who was again nominated at the SAGs. And then it is nominated for Best Cast in a Motion Picture, which is the equivalent of the Best Picture Award. So I still think that lead actress is a very competitive category. Demi Moore won. She's, of course, nominated at the SAGs as well. It's going to be interesting to see, because I think you've also got, this great performance by Mikey Madison and Anora that had all the buzz going into everything. And now I'm kind of wondering if maybe the buzz on that didn't peak too soon. Carla Sofia Gascon would be a history making, it is a history making nomination, but would be history making win, as she is a trans actress. And this is the first time a trans actress has been nominated for lead actor or lead actress in this case. Female, it depends on which award you're talking about, because some of them call it female actress and some of female actor, some of them call it actress in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So, the film, I don't know how I feel about that as a Best Picture contender still. It is up, at the SAGs. It's competing with Wicked, Conclave, A Complete Unknown, and Anora, which is interesting because, another one that it seems to be a favorite this year for possibly winning the Oscar for Best Picture and won the Best Drama Film Golden Globe is The Brutalist.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not get a cast nomination, despite, we talked earlier about Adrian Brody and about how he's, been kind of a favorite male leading actor, and he is nominated for that here. But this film also did not get any supporting nominations, where there has been a lot of buzz for Felicity Jones for her role in this movie. And for Guy Pearce for his role in this movie, for supporting actor and supporting actress. So the SAGs kind of, in some ways, seem to have really kind of snubbed Brutalist. And I'm just curious how that plays out. It feels like a very Oscar kind of movie.
Yeah.
But then again, on the other hand, the biggest voting branch in the Oscars is the actors. So the SAGs can be kind of a heavy indicator on the Oscars. Do you have any thoughts about that, Jeremy?
To what you just now said, another surprise of the evening is that Anora did not end up walking with more awards.
Didn't win anything.
It did.
Didn't win anything.
Had a lot of nominations and was expecting it to be I was expecting it to be one of the most decorated and celebrated movies of the year, having not even seen it, but that was just kind of the buzz. And with The Brutalist, learning a little bit more about it, I very much agree with you that this is the type of movie that often does get Academy recognition. It hits a lot of the hallmarks. So I'm surprised that the Screen Actors Guild isn't giving it more attention than they are. I don't know how much of an indicator it is, but I do feel that after the Golden Globes, it has to at least have a bit of momentum behind it.
Yeah, I feel like lead actress going through award season is going to be the most competitive category. And it's going to be interesting to see when the next few awards come down, whether we see a trend or not. I feel like supporting actress, I feel like Zoe Saldana is probably going to win this everywhere, despite the fact that there was such buzz for Ariana Grande and Wicked. And I'm really pleased to see that at the SAGs, the supporting nominations are a little different than they were at the Globes. You've got Monica Barbaro in here for A Complete Unknown, which I thought she was phenomenal in. You've got Jamie Lee Curtis for The Last Showgirl. Again, I thought she was phenomenal in that. Neither one of them got Globe nominations. And I don't believe Daniel Deadwyler did for The Piano Lesson either. I'd have to go back and double check. We'll see how that plays out as the Critics' Choice and some of these others start to come in, and then as we get the Oscar nominations next week. But I feel, the same way in supporting actor, it feels like Kieran Culkin's probably going to run through the season on that, despite mm-hmm. some others that I think are really, really good. And I kind of think Adrian Brody's probably going to run through the season too, despite, my being a big fan of Timothy Chalamet and A Complete Unknown and Ralph Fiennes and Conclave. Those feel like locks. So to me, the leading actress is the category that is almost the most interesting one to watch right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. The Best Picture race, I do still feel is kind of a little bit open too. And I have seen some stories along the lines of, can something win at Cannes, which Anora did, and then, kind of go through the season, not win anything and still get Best Picture. And the answer is yes. There was a movie called Spotlight a few years ago that did exactly that.
Yeah.
So,
great movie too.
We could still see that with Anora, which, for me, the two best movies of the year were Anora and The Substance. And so I am all here for any awards that those two movies can pick up. As good as I think Mikey Madison is in Anora, I think Demi Moore is just as good in The Substance. And I think Mikey's going to have a lot more opportunities over the years. So
that I can definitely speak to. Because I haven't seen her, nor I can't speak to the quality of the two performances. I almost feel like Demi is in this kind of, and I hate to use the term because I know how reductive it is, but almost in like a career awarding her for the longevity of her career.
Oh, yeah, and Oscar has a reputation for that, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what happens there, but I would kind of lean towards that being the winner.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at things like Paul Newman winning for The Color of Money after years of being nominated for stuff and not winning. Yeah, there's a number of things you could point out along those same roads. Or places where somebody won, like, the year after they probably should have won. Like like Russell Crowe winning for Gladiator instead of winning for
A Beautiful Mind,
I believe it was. Yeah, the year before. Mm-hmm. Things like that. I'm interested to see that the SAGs seem to be so different than some of these other awards organizations so far in terms of the acting awards. Another thing that we're seeing is in the supporting roles, seeing people like Jonathan Bailey got a nomination for Wicked. I don't think I've seen that happening anywhere else.
Right.
I was very pleased to see Edward Norton in there for A Complete Unknown, because I think he's phenomenal in that movie as well. I also think that this is kind of that's nice and all, but we're going to give it to Kieran Culkin. And it's kind of unfair because Kieran Culkin's performance in A Real Pain is really a co-lead. And
yeah, that's an interesting conversation in itself.
Yeah. But it's very interesting to see where it'll go from here. We'll see. The SAGs will get presented on February 23rd. It's going to be on Netflix for the first time. Kristen Bell is going to be the host, so we'll see how that goes. And then we'll keep abreast of this as the nominations keep coming out for the various awards over the next few weeks. Going to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Niles channel on YouTube. And despite what Black Grape is telling us, we are going to talk about heroes and villains and characters related to the DC universe. First of all, before we get into the meat of what I want to talk about here, Jeremy, we got to acknowledge that we had the least surprising casting news of all time last week. That being that, to the shock and awe of absolutely nobody, Jason Momoa is returning to DC on the big screen, but not as Aquaman.
What?
He will be playing Lobo.
What? I never heard that.
Yeah, right.
it's like you said, most obvious.
It's the casting that always should have been. Like Lobo is quite possibly the role that Momoa was born to play.
We were talking about him as Lobo before he was cast as Aquaman.
Yeah. So yeah. Here for it. I like Momoa a lot. I think he's got a great screen presence, and this is the right character for him more than Aquaman was. Even though I liked the first Aquaman movie a lot. Second one, not so much, but this is the right choice. But we're gonna go from there to the thing that the internet has just been blowing up over this week, and that is that Josh Brolin has apparently been in discussions for a role at DC that nobody knows what the role is, but everybody wants to speculate on it. And
here we are.
Yeah, and so we're gonna add to it. But the speculation seems to be centered on two things. Well, first of all, it's out there and known that he was approached to play Hal Jordan in the Lantern series and passed on that. Which is interesting because I seem to remember that the same thing kind of happened when they were gonna a while back when in the whole DCEU. When they went to Chris Pine and said, we've got two roles that we like you for. You could play Hal Jordan or you could play Steve Trevor. And he passed on Hal Jordan and went for Steve Trevor. So we already know that in the Lantern series, Hal Jordan is going to be played by Kyle Chandler. That's already set. That's good to go. We've got the casting there. That's being worked on. So what is Josh Brolin up for? And there's been two like roles that I think have been the most heavily speculated on. And I want to get your take on both of those before we maybe talk about what might be a better choice, if there is a better choice than the ones we're talking about. So Brolin posted some kind of fan art of himself as Darkseid, who is like the epic big bag of the DC universe. He is the leader of the evil new gods. And the ruler of Apocalypse. And you know, we saw a little bit of him in the Snyder Cut version of Justice League, but a version that I don't think really did the character justice. He is very much the DC answer to Thanos, which is a role that Brolin has already played. In fact, the truth is that when Thanos was created at Marvel, Thanos was very much a knockoff of Darkseid. Darkseid came first. So, is it a mistake to have Brolin play basically the same role at DC?
If you open it up, just because I got takes.
That was a direct question to you, sir.
It is a mistake. It is a mistake. And I am culturally aware enough to understand that Darkseid was the OG. I think it would be disingenuous to act as if one was guilty of copying the other while that was not done in return. And oftentimes it's simply a matter of writers moving from one publication and illustrators moving from one publication to the other. So there was a lot of kind of cross-pollinating of ideas. I mean, we could point to like Deathstroke and Deadpool and many, many examples of...
You can, but in a lot of these cases, and the two that you happen to have brought up, it's very clear. In the case of Deadpool, Rob Liefeld was absolutely a Teen Titans fanboy, and Deadpool is Deathstroke, at least at the start. Yeah. Now, the way the character has gone off in its own direction, it's become its own thing. But if you go back and look at the very first appearances of that character, I mean, even to the extent that Deathstroke's real name is Slade Wilson and Deadpool's is Wade Wilson.
Yeah, yeah,
It's basically Deathstroke with a little bit of a Spider-Man suit thrown in on it.
I say that but
the same thing is true with Thanos and Darkseid. Jim Starlin was very much a Jack Kirby fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Starlin is a great creator. He's made a lot of great stuff, a lot of stuff that you've seen in the Marvel movies he's responsible for. He's done a lot of great stuff at DC, too, including some stuff with Darkseid. But there was a very clear inspiration from Darkseid for Thanos.
We have to remember that somebody picked up their first comic book yesterday. There is an entire generation of people that are learning the history as they go from whatever point that they're at now. It doesn't mean Absolutely. That they should acknowledge where things started, but there is a large swath of people who are familiar with all of this stuff through the MCU. So it Oh, yeah. is going to be an inevitable comparison, and regardless of the chicken and the egg type situation, many, many people know Josh Brolin as Thanos. Now, don't get me wrong, Marvel pulled this boneheaded cast move that it might turn out great, but it's very stunt casting, and I'm not always super keen on stunt casting, but when they casted Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom, that was divisive. I think the majority of people love Robert Downey Jr. It's great. We're going to watch it play out. That's fine. But right now, the optics are it looks more like stunt casting, and there are so many talented people out there in the world. Why go back to the well in that way?
Yeah, I'm with you, and I agree with what you're saying about what the public perception is going to be in that regard. Yeah, I think that is part of what the Flash movie suffered from, because even though the multiverse, in terms of comics, was very much a concept that DC originated and pushed, and did so in The Flash in particular,
mm-hmm.
by the time The Flash movie came out, and we'd already had a bunch of multiverse stuff at Marvel, it looked also ran.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah, yeah. And fairly or not, but like you keyed on the perfect sample of it, and that is that it's public perception. Now, these actors, obviously there's mocap performances. Josh Brolin is very visible in Thanos. There's a way to do him as Darkseid where we don't look at it and see Josh Brolin at all, and then that just brings me back to the question of why.
Yeah. Well, so let's move on from that to the other one that is the big one floating around the Speculatron. So we know that there's a movie coming out called The Brave and the Bold that is in progress. They haven't cast anybody yet or anything, but it's in progress. It's being screenplay is being worked on, etc. This is a Batman and Robin movie with an older Batman who is breaking in a new Robin who is his son. So you got to have a Batman that's old enough to have a, you know, let's say 11, 12 year old. What do you think about Brolin as Batman?
I love it.
Really?
This is the first I'm hearing about this. I had no idea that was in the rumor mill. Immediately, I love it. Is it possible that I'm only comparing it to the Darkseid casting and I'm just so relieved that this kind of makes sense? But I am a big Josh Brolin fan. This is not in any way to detract from him as an actor. I think he's incredibly talented. But I could see him as a grizzled Bruce Wayne. He has a machismo, and like kind of a old school classic Hollywood leading man essence that I feel is different from a lot of the Batman that we've seen in previous iterations. But I think that he has charisma and a like, I'll kick your butt kind of sensibility that could really lend itself well to a more seasoned Batman.
He is 56.
He's old for the role.
He's
going to
be, by the time this movie comes out,
I have a 10-year-old son.
By the time this movie comes out, he's probably going to be 58, 59. That being said, and I realize obviously we've got a younger Superman than that, but that being said, Kyle Chandler is 59 is going to be playing Hal Jordan. Like you could have this Batman be a contemporary of Hal Jordan, and I'd be okay with that.
Uh-huh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, even though Superman's younger and hasn't been around quite as long, and maybe that differs from the mainstream, you know, that we're used to in the comics, but like I could see where it could work. I'm on the fence on it. Like I do think he'd be good, but I just have concerns about how much longevity there is in the role for him at that point.
Are we sure that they're casting young Robin, or is that speculative?
No, it's definitively Damian Wayne. So yeah, maybe they'll make him a little older than he was in the comics when he first appeared, but you know, they're not going to make him older than like 14, 15, I don't think.
If he was 25, it would certainly make a lot more sense.
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
Josh Brolin could have grandkids.
They're not going to do that. That would defeat the purpose of it being Damian Wayne.
Okay.
It absolutely would. Do you have another idea in mind of somebody in the DC universe that you'd want to see Brolin in?
Oh boy, right off the top of my head, I have no idea. Like if he could return to his role in Jonah Hex, I think that would make everybody super happy.
Yeah, let's not forget he did make a DC movie already and it didn't go so well. Well, we'll see what happens. We've got to run for this week, but we will catch up with you again next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.